Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers as we try out this new format of working with LinkedIn Live. It's quite a bit different than working with LinkedIn Audio, and I've spent the last week trying to figure this all out. We are live. Thank you, Liz, for that. Hi, Keith. It's good to see you. So one of the things that's different with LinkedIn Live is obviously I get to broadcast something. You should all see a whiteboard with some stickies on it. This is going to be our first attempt at sharing some knowledge while we're working, and our speakers who are here are able to do that. At some of these, we will do actual real video, and some of these will have different types of things on the screen. But I want to make it easy for everybody. If you don't want to have a screen on and you just want to listen, you're not going to miss much. And then I will share the whiteboard as an image once we're all done. The other thing that's different is I can't see who's joining. I know there's right now 13 people who are here. We usually get somewhere between 25 and 40 people joining, and we usually get to see the people who are here and click on those people. And unfortunately, LinkedIn Audio is really good at that, being able to look at seeing who's live and go view your profiles. The only way you can do that right now is through the networking tab, and it's going to show you, I think, everybody who's registered. So it's not going to show you who's live. I think, Joanne, this is somewhat of a privacy setting, because
I would
you
agree.
Have to, I actually think this is probably a smarter way of doing that, even though we don't necessarily like it as speakers. But if you want to get known, come say hello. John has figured out how to use a common stream, even though he's speaking. Go ahead, John. Good to see you here on the live stream. If you want to get yourself known and let people know that you're here, just say hello on the comment stream. And this will also be a place for anybody who wants to ask a question. It's early in the morning. I'm here in San Francisco this week. So I'm a little bit behind from where I'm normally at. Hi, David. Welcome back. So we're trying out this new format. We've got almost everybody here. And it's kind of coincidental that we're doing this session today on generative AI and design thinking, and understanding how generative AI is changing or potentially has the way of changing of how we're using and doing design thinking. So I'm really excited to have this conversation. And let's just jump in and get started. I'm trying to look for where I left my questions. This is unfortunate. Here we go. It's right here on this. No, it's not on the screen. I'm going to start with Joanne. Joanne, welcome to the stage. I wanted to kick this off and just say generative AI is doing a lot of things in the doing phase and what I think we would call the prototypes phase. We're actually implementing something and we're having generative AI generate content and code, generate wireframes, doing all the sort of hands-on work that goes into thinking through solutions. So I want to back up a little bit and start giving our listeners some ideas. If you go back into the much earlier stages of innovation, and we're talking about being empathetic with users, we're talking about defining the problems and ideating, and starting to look at how generative AI can change those parts of the workflow and can be maybe agentic in terms of how we're using generative AI, either to accelerate or to test new ideas and just be more creative in general. So I'm gonna open it up with you, Joanne, first and get your sense of how you might see using generative AI as a partner when you're implementing stages of design thinking.
It's a really interesting notion. You know, it goes anywhere from how you might take ideas that are randomly being generated in sort of like brainstorming sessions, right? I mean, part of design thinking, it is a process-driven approach. It's strategic, it's purposeful. Empathy is definitely a huge factor in it. But as you're doing the initial design, one of the things that happens in design thinking meetings without AI is you sort of go through this brainstorming. I have an idea about this, and people will give very brief thoughts. The use of AI for that, and I know agentic AI in particular could be very useful here, but even think about using generative AI, whether it's GPT or Sonnet or Haiku, which is part of Anthropic as well, and you start a chain of thought dialogue, and you're doing that on screen with text. So using a Gen AI type format for design thinking gives you an opportunity at the ideation stage to not just have the brief thought, but to have the more detailed thought and have a build session where other people would say, well, just like you're asking me the question, Isaac, I could come back to you and say, well, what is your new idea? Oh, let's use Zoom and let's use a whiteboard. Okay, well, how would that work? And what would people actually put on those, what on their Kanban version of the whiteboard, et cetera, in terms of the comments? This dialogue that you and I and other people, all of us who are speaking here, would have could be captured not only as a note taker, but then in a Gen AI kind of environment, the AI would say, oh, this is a really good idea, and here's how you could ex instantiate it faster, or that's an idea that has validity but might not be all that fruitful, right? So you can shorten your ideation process, not to take individuals' brilliance away, but rather to fast track the end result while still being empathetic. So you're shortening your other parts of the cycle and the process for design thinking by using a tool that helps you play out all the various aspects, like a bigger chain of thought dialogue amongst a larger group of people would be that ideation phase. And I think it's going to be a wonderful tool, but only as a tool.
Yeah, I like the idea of speeding up, but I also like the notion of expanding the scope of what you're considering. I mean, using your example, Joanne, we were thinking the last week, how are we going to use this new LinkedIn Live format? And I just came up with the idea of maybe we should try doing a whiteboard, which we have in front of us where we can all use. But I didn't go to ChatGPT or any of the others and ask it, how might I use a whiteboard during a LinkedIn Live session and get it to be my partner and give me some ideas around that. Even using a generative AI in the body of this screen was something I'm still considering. I think it'll take a little bit more thinking about how we might do that. We're already using generative AI to do some summaries for that for us. And so I think it's another companion for us. And I think particularly as you think about generative AI getting into private AIs and now working behind the enterprise firewall and being able to ask questions around the enterprise data. And so you could be in a brainstorming session and ask generative AI a question in your CRM system. How much revenue have we generated over the last 3 years from this customer segment? And generative AI being able to give you that kind of answer really quickly. Obviously, that's hard to do today. Getting a pulse on all your data while you're trying to have a very efficient and effective dialogue with your colleagues. So I'm really looking not just for speed, I'm looking for enriching the experience. Let's go around the room. Go ahead, Joanne, and then we'll
Sorry,
go.
I just want to give you a part, a two parting comments because I think it's really important for the audience. One, don't even attempt to try something like that unless you have 99% assurity that you have very, very good data. Because otherwise, you're going to have very skewed results and you're going to end up with a notion that you think that this is the right answer, but in fact, it's not. So, data governance, data cleanliness, the quality of your data, if you don't have that in order first, please go down that road before you attempt anything even remotely close to what Isaac just mentioned about talking to the CRM and getting that information. Because, different systems have different ways. If you've done a migration recently, you may have lost some data, or you may have more data and gaps. And that's going to absolutely influence the result you get from the AI. Sorry, Isaac. I just
No,
wanted to make it very clear.
I'm glad you mentioned that because every platform is advertising generative AI right now, right? And every platform that is doing that and saying, hey, I can answer questions in my CRM or in my HR system, I'm asking them the question saying, are you telling your end users and your customers whether your data is good enough for the Gen AI that you're plugging on top of it? And we know HR systems are notoriously bad in terms of data quality. We know CRM systems are notoriously bad. And I haven't seen a single platform answer this question for their end users. So I think it's a really good point about how far you go down this path of partnering with generative AI, particularly around getting data out of your systems. Let's go around the room. Let's say, Joe, welcome to the floor. I know you had a conference this week, and I'm wondering if you have anything to share from it, but also your ideas around how Gen AI can help with design thinking.
Yeah, I think there are two points. Building on Joanne's comment, it's all about the data. It's essential that the data be, high quality, good quality, complete, unbiased, and so on before you can really lean on generative AI in this overall process, in any phase of this process. So I think, as I posted, two thoughts. In the near term, as we've just talked about, it can be an accelerant to the process. It can be, as you pointed out, the note taker. It can help in conducting research against the data, which you then have to validate or check out further by other means. In the longer term, I do think that it'll get to the ideation stage. It will begin to suggest potential solutions or identify trends leading to new products or services that could be successful in the marketplace. So that's kind of where I'm at, accelerant in the near term and ideation potentially in the longer term.
Excellent. Thank you, Joe. Who else is here? John, want to jump in here?
Yeah, I've found generative AI super helpful for summarization. So like Joanne said, you're having the conversation with somebody, you can turn it on so it records. You have a transcript of the conversation with the live human being. And then I found generative AI helpful for saying like, hey, what are some topics that we should cover when we're looking into this one, and have it give us the topics back. And then we can actually use it to audit our transcript saying, okay, we had this conversation. We wanted to hit these topics, like which things did we miss? And have it come back with some areas that like, hey, the generative AI can tell you that, you may have missed this and this and this. And so then you can go have another conversation with the human and hit these areas. And so I just found generative real like, if you just want to get stuff straight from generative AI, it's all going to look like fast food. But it's pretty good at figuring out what topics should have. And then you can actually go do the work with humans to get the information in those areas. And then you can use it to check your work to make sure you hit all the areas that you should. Like, what else should I consider? What are all the functional and other things that we should be looking to in this area?
John, have you found a note-taking transcript that does this live? Like I can get a summary with action items out of Zoom, but only after I close out the event. And I think if you can get a brainstorm that captures, action items, capture summary and detail while the event is going on, I think that's, I mean, we all have BAs in every one of these sessions taking notes for people. So is there a tool that you use for that?
Well, so the one that I really love is actually Microsoft's Copilot, the one that you pay for, the $30 a month one. And so you have to do a couple of things in your meeting though, which is you start the meeting, you start the recording, you go over to the Copilot button, you hit that, and you have it do all the transcriptions, and you can just see them live as the conversation's going on, and you can copy and paste them out. And then, like when the meeting wraps, it needs a couple minutes, and then it can start doing the processing on stuff. But that's the one that I've had really, really good luck with.
John, we're going to have to experiment with that here, I think, because for those of you who don't know, LinkedIn Live is just a broadcast tool. I have to pick where we're recording from. And today we're using Zoom with its whiteboard feature to try this out. We're going to try lots of different formats, just A, to keep it interesting, and then B, maybe to find something that we think is all working for us. So you can connect teams into LinkedIn Live, and I'll have to do another test of that one, but we'll see if we can use that live transcript, because that was actually something I was thinking about as a pretty cool output for everybody. Let's see who else is here. Hi, Heather. Your thoughts? We're talking about design thinking and where generative AI provides value.
Thank you. Well, two thoughts. On a personal note, I used Gen AI after I did a whole presentation, and I want to make sure that I didn't forget any areas to address. And I didn't, which was really gratifying. But I also had some additional ones that didn't come up, so I threw back in those ideas to get some pointers for my presentation. But one of the things I was thinking about was using Gen AI and expanding the breadth of coverage on the people that are involved. So if different people ask different questions into Gen AI based on their culture, based on their language, they might get different responses, and that cultural diversity could really improve and enhance the experience and the output and develop greater insights and greater conversations that lead to even greater outcomes. So I was thinking from a cultural perspective.
Heather, I like that suggestion. Adam Grant has a new book out. I forget the name of it, but I'll paste it in the comments later on. And he talks about the flaw of brainstorming as just an inefficient way of doing ideation. And what he has good data in the book on and recommends is before you go out and get people in a room, get people to work individually around their ideas, get them to do this in a transparent way, and then bring people together as a way of sharing ideas. But don't do the brainstorming live. Like he says, it just translates into the loudest person in the room getting the mic and sharing things. And I think that's your point, Heather, right? That we want to use these tools as a way to get a lot more opinions from diverse backgrounds when we're doing a brainstorming.
Absolutely. But referencing also something that Jennifer Krevet mentioned last week is the complexity of people, and how when you don't want in your brainstorming session to be so homogeneous that everybody is just a groupthink. You want that diversity. So some things will come out during the planning session that's like, oh, wait, I never thought about that. And did you think of it using it this way? But having the group be divergent and diverse would be, to me, the greatest, among the greatest benefits.
Liz, are you here? I see you here. You'll have to go off mute. She found the mute button. Hi, Liz. Welcome to the new
Hi, how are
format.
you? It's I was just testing the new broadcasting methodology to see how well it's going. I've been using the AI and design thinking and problem solving in a lot of different ways. And I really see it branching out by the more that I learn how to ask it questions that I would normally ask of a business analyst. Like, for example, put together a table of the top five project management tools and compare them. I start getting better at asking the questions, and that gives me more data, like and not necessarily to absolve me from the hard thinking of what this is going to mean for my clients, or what it's going to mean for me in particular, but to collect information that would normally take tons of time and hours of a junior staff member. Now that the loss is that the junior staff member doesn't learn those things, but maybe they never will have to. Right.
So, Liz, I want to scenario play with you. And you've run PMOs before. You're asked to facilitate a problem-solving session. You're going to potentially use some elements of design thinking. You're going to have, half the people in the room and the other half, and maybe another office or two and some remote. You have this opportunity to use generative AI as part of the program. Are you using it in some way, or what are your thoughts around that?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the work around
The hard work around, building PMOs and building governance models has to do with the people, right? Not the process, right? And we've always said people, process, then technology. And the people part is the hardest part. And you can't replace that with AI. People have to be able to give voice to their opinions, their concerns, right? And that has to be a very soft touch. Now, can you leverage AI to, help you generate what are the top concerns, where are the possible, pain points, things like that to maybe, prompt you in, your interviewing process and, collect that information, et cetera, but really it's about that soft touch to make sure that people are involved. You're never going to get rid of governance per se. You can use tools to, pull the data together, but in the end, people still have to make decisions on, alignment to strategy. I mean, we're not in the matrix yet, right?
Oh boy, I'm going right to the
Sorry.
matrix.
Well,
No,
I
it's
mean, where,
no, because
I
as you were
mean,
talking about this, I was like thinking to myself, imagine that generative AI is listening in and isn't smart, and somebody gives out their opinion or an idea, and the generative AI speaks up and says, well, that's not aligned to strategy, right? And that's not one of our priorities, which people in the room will do, but it would be awful if generative AI started providing that type of feedback. And yet it's in the realm of possibilities.
what we
It's
wanted them to say is, maybe prompt with like, let's see where it is aligned to the strategy. How is it aligned to strategy? And if it isn't, is there something missing from our strategy?
interesting.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's interesting.
it's a good point, but it's not it the we use the machine. The machine does not use us.
That strikes me as spooky, Isaac. It's as spooky as every once in a while when my Amazon Echo answers a question that I didn't ask.
Like I see that a lot more than it does spook me out when I on one device doing a search as part of my writing, and then all of a sudden in an app on my phone, it's giving me ads for it. And you start asking the question, well, how is it making that data connection? But look, I don't know. I don't.
Your IP address is shared. That's how it does that.
Maybe,
Nice.
but yeah, I am. I'm less worried about the privacy around this. I'm more worried about the Gen AI that thinks it's being helpful and is programmed to be helpful, and there's unintended consequences in terms of what information is sharing. And Joanne, I'm going to go back to you before we take our break. Joanne, other than data, what other things should we be looking out for today? As we're trying to use design thinking and we're using generative AI as maybe a partner to us.
We have to remember that generative AI is not sentient. It does not understand empathy. So we have to be careful to include in our prompt, if you will, the initial prompt that we are going to use it in a design thinking environment, to assume the role of someone who is an empath. If you don't tell it to take on that persona, then it simply acts in many ways, even the agentic AI, or agents that are built with Gen AI, will not have that capability, right? Because it's a machine. It's an evolution of natural language processing. It has resources from which it draws based on what it's been taught. But I don't know that you could necessarily, unless you're, revisiting the movie Her or something else, able to give it the behavioral and sentiment tools to make it empathetic. So you can have something that's very robotic commenting on what is emotionally driven or being fostered from an empathic point of view. ideas, and that changes the game completely. So when we start to look at these tools, even in building AI agents, like I'm in the process of doing a bunch of them on Hugging Face now, you really have to consider all the various aspects of human nature, human intelligence, where we're going to make a pun, where we're not going to make a pun, where we're trying to be thoughtful and creative in the design thinking process, as well as empathic. Those are very hard things to translate into an AI.
So let's reverse this again. We're trying to we have to steer away from having too high of expectations around the data that it might provide us. We need to validate that first. We have to give it prompts so that we know that it is being empathetic. We think we can use this pre-brainstorming sessions in the early stages, where we have individuals working on a problem as a partner. I think that's a good use case that we introduced with Heather's comments. And I think John's comments about capturing live feedback during an ideation session, for example, I think that is tremendously valuable rather than having somebody capturing notes. Is there another pragmatic area? We love using that word here. A pragmatic area you want to introduce before the break?
The other thing that I would say is not only to set the expectations about the interpretation of empathy, and it is an interpretation based on text or words, and we all know that nuance is not part of Gen AI's vocabulary, but rather also to say that set your expectations for what the tool is and is not. Don't give it something super complex math problem and it'll spit out a result, but that it's going to tell you the reasoning behind that. Unless you ask it specifically, how did you come up with that? In other words, there is a threshold at which you need to use another form of AI. Even in agentic frameworks, there are limitations. And so you have to be aware of what kind of persona are you giving it? What kind of tonality are you giving it? What kind of nuance do you want it to be able to pick up on based on the way the words are being given, whether it's audible or in text? And if you set those parameters properly, you will get a good result. If you don't expect much in the way of, okay, we have a solution to a problem, but the confidence level that you have in that solution will be much lower, or should be much lower, I should say.
So set low expectations. And Juliet on the comment stream is also saying, be cognizant of how you're using these tools in terms of understanding and realizing these things chew up a lot of power, a lot more power than a Google search. And I don't know if that's back of mind for people right now. It's not front and center. The companies putting out the models don't want you to be thinking about the overall cost. They are trying to drive consumption up. Juliet, we may have to cover that in another session. At what point do we have to start thinking about, ethical use of AI and where our thoughts around power consumption should be when we're applying it in different areas? I think it's an interesting but probably hard question to answer. I want to take my break, folks. Thank you for joining this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. This is our 106th episode, but our first one running as a LinkedIn Live event. You could see we're a little bit awkward in terms of how we're running it because we've only had to figure this out in the last week. And I'm trying to do something a little bit different. Rather than having all of us go on video and seeing us talk, I think we'll do that in a couple sessions. But I want to make it easy for all of you that just want to listen into a conversation. You're not missing much. We're taking some notes for you in a whiteboard. I will share the whiteboard as a screenshot later on if you miss this. But that's our approach this week. We'll probably do something very similar next week. And then I'll use the holiday season to do a little bit of regrouping and figuring out what we're going to do next. So thank you for this. One thing that's very different, you now have a comment stream. I would love to see Your thoughts, your questions, your ideas. If you're using generative AI in design thinking or problem solving, please share your ideas around this. If you have some concerns around this, Juliet, for example, some concerns around power, please share those. This is a think tank. This is not a webinar. This is not us experts just sharing what we know. And I'd love to see more of you share what you're thinking around here. We have a number of episodes that I've locked in coming up on the 20th, Shaping Tomorrow, the moral courage to doing the right thing the right way. This came from one of our listeners. I think Dave Morgan is here listening, and he'll be sponsoring our questions into next week around this. On the 27th, we will take a break for the holiday. We'll be back on the 3rd, culture transformation, establishing a resilient culture. I believe, Derek, I think you're the one who recommended this one. I thought it was a good topic for kicking off 2025 with. There's going to be a lot of change in 2025. And for those of you who knew, I did a survey last week. About 25 of you responded to give me a sense of what topics you wanted to cover and how to run this new LinkedIn Live format. And I'm going to try to incorporate some of those ideas in our upcoming session. So that's the one on the 3rd. On the 10th is an episode that I had to move, but I think is going to be an important one, implementing safe Gen AI guardrails. Now, we're using the word guardrails a lot. But in every platform and in every discussion, it probably means something different. So we're going to talk about what resilient, what Gen AI guardrails are. I don't know what I have for the 17th or the 31st yet, but I know the 24th, I have a couple of experts coming in to talk about quantum. I don't have the title for it yet, but quantum has moved from science fiction to lab to some really very practical use cases and some very important things we need to consider, particularly for large enterprises going into the next few years. So I'm bringing on some experts to partner with us on that particular conversation. And you can see here, there's a link, starcio.com/coffee/next event that still will redirect to the upcoming event. And I left you a link to the Digital Trailblazer community. That's at drive.starcio.com/community. Please do consider joining us. We are growing that community online. And if you have any questions around that, please join us. Just one last announcement. One of our listeners, speakers, hopefully soon to be expert, Sukanya Konatam, released a new book recently around AI governance. She's here listening today, and she left a link to that book in the comment stream. I have a copy of it. Sukanya, I'm about halfway through it. It is very, very interesting. I don't know if there are other books covering AI governance yet, and she leaves a lot of her best practices in this book. So if this area interests you, the book is on Amazon, and I recommend picking up a copy of some thought leadership from one of our listeners and our experts. So thank you, Sukanya, for sharing that with us. Joanne has made it onto the whiteboard, I think, unless somebody is putting their comments in Joanne's square. Folks, here's our second question for the day. Maybe we will start with John on this. John, I want to talk about problem solving. And it used to be requiring getting people into rooms and brainstorming. How can digital trailblazers use generative AI, digital twins, and other technology and techniques to enhance the experience, consider more scenarios, and enable faster, more data-driven, and inclusive problem solving? It's a little bit overlap with what we've been talking about, but I want to get into maybe in some use cases. We do brainstorming on solving incidents when there are operational issues, researching root cause when there are security problems, finding solutions with our dev teams, reviewing data in our marketing teams, and trying to figure out what to do next with us. So anytime I bring a group together and I'm trying to do some problem solving with them and decide what to do next, I think there's opportunities to be using generative AI. And we covered some of them in terms of being able to capture notes, and be able to do some research, maybe with the ability to do some data discovery. And I want to talk about, like, if you're on an agile team, if you're on a design team, how are you using generative AI in one of your problem-solving sessions? Go ahead, John.
And if you're getting input from a lot of people, one thing that we've done is we figured out like how we want to extract out information from something, and we'll basically create a template for that, and then we've used generative AI to take the input from people and to extract it out onto the template, and then to summarize what we have, and that does take development. Scales massively, we actually use the same pattern to ingest in like a like 1,000 PDFs. Each PDF was basically the a write-up of something, and we were able to get it. For each of
John?
is it just me or is John really completely breaking up
Can't
there?
hear a word he's saying.
Okay,
Oh,
so it's not
sorry, yeah.
John. You're like, we lost most of what you were just saying. There's just
That's
lost in,
interference.
yeah, it was just breaking up in your audio. Do you want to like summarize for us again?
Yeah, if I have audio now, what I was saying is generative AI is really good at allowing you to come up with a template and then basically extracting information out from a response into that template. And so you can allows you to scale and getting answers from lots of different people and get the information summarized. And then once you have it in your structured template that you want, you can get the generative AI to come up with what are the keywords for that or the other key points for something. And then you can look at it at even a higher level. And so in summary, I found generative AI really, really good for helping you scale at looking at lots of different responses from people.
Thank you. Thanks for all the comments here. We're still getting used to this format, and I assumed the problem was on my end. Just because I'm in a hotel this morning, but it looks like John, you had some audio issues. I apologize to all our listeners for that. I want to go back to Joe and, kind of ask Joe kind of an outlandish question. Are we putting AI at the executive level in the boardroom yet, or like stay away from that when we do problem solving inside the an executive meeting?
Wow, that's a scary thought. On the one hand, I think maybe AI could make some better decisions than decisions that I've been a party to in the boardroom level. But on a serious note, I would say no. Aside from what we've already talked about in terms of being an electronic assistant to the board, perhaps taking notes and summarizing with someone scrutinizing for accuracy post meeting. I don't see AI making those board level decisions just yet.
Well, I'm not looking for decisions yet. I'm looking for a companion, and I'll just share a story, Joe. What I love doing with executive meetings that are just married to their PowerPoints is taking it away from them and saying, we're going to have this discussion with some, questions that we come in with. But also questions that come up with during the course of our conversation. And we're going to put a couple platform experts in the room to get us the data that we need when we need some data, whether it's, from the ERP around our finances and have some reports ready directly out of those systems or data right out of our CRM systems. And so I asked you that question, Joe, because I could really foresee the day where that expert that I'm looking for to guide that navigation in our systems potentially is an AI doing some of this for us. Maybe not like listening in and giving us that answer and showing graphs and charts automatically, but maybe that driver inside the system is using, maybe they're not as skilled as they are today, and they're using prompts to get the data that they're looking for. So it might be a little risky to do this today, but I see a lot of possibility around that.
Well, I agree with that, Isaac, with the caveat, of course, as Joanne so aptly pointed out much earlier, you have to trust that the data are accurate and unbiased. You also have to be very cognizant of how the questions are asked. So the so-called prompt engineering would be absolutely critical so that the answers evoked from the AI engine were the right, accurate, and useful not decisions, but information on which to base decisions. I do think if the data are solid and we have thoughtful, proper questions asked of the engine, then maybe it can suggest alternative strategies or avenues to pursue in a more creative or insightful mode as well. I
Isaac,
agree. Go ahead.
sorry, to Joe's point, trust is a huge deal. We have to keep reminding ourselves because many of us are such frequent users of the LLMs that are out there that they have an expiry date, meaning when they were trained until. That's number one. So the data that you're asking it is based on usually a historical set of circumstances situationally and contextually. Number two, to your point, yes, I had a situation earlier this week. It was a board meeting and Gen AI was asked a question. Well, what was the number for such and such, a piece of data? And the answer that came back was very mind-blowing to a number of people on the call. And I said to them, first of all, this is a 2023 number, not 2024. And second of all, unless the AI engine is privy to all the data inside the four walls, meaning it's a private model, what you're getting is the rest of the world's data. So you can't look at it and take it at face value. And I think that's the mistake that many, many people are making, is not to go back and double check, even though Anthropic and with Claude and ChatGPT with o4o and every other LLM carries the disclaimer, it can make mistakes. Everybody seems to throw that little phrase aside. And I just want to reiterate, it's not that I'm against this stuff. I love it. I use it constantly, but you have to be mindful of the fact that it's a machine, like a car. You can trust your car to drive you somewhere, but if you start seeing little warning lights go off, you have to take it more seriously.
Yeah, and there are no warning lights on the generative AI dashboard,
Correct.
are there?
Not yet,
No.
but Joe, you and I saw a demo a couple weeks ago of an agentic AI, and I've seen a couple of examples where they're providing proof points. Right. Remember what we talked about agents. They're reviewing the language. They're having a conversation with other agents in English language, and they're coming up with their assessment. And they're either recommending actions and in some cases actioning them. The examples that Joe and I saw was number one, providing proof points around some of the data they picked up that is being asked about, and then a thread in English around all the different agents it spoke to, what language it sent, what the responses were. So you can literally see a stream of thought in English or in the language of your choice, because I think a lot of them are being programmed to be multilingual, and getting some transparency around that. Joanne, I don't think it's at the level that you're looking for, because I still have not seen any kind of tool that points at an agent or points at an LLM and says you can get accurate data out of this because you fed it accurate data. And I think
Yeah.
that I think that's a big part of what you're getting at.
Yeah, and especially within the corporate environment, I mean, we have to start thinking about the inside LLM, our use of it, and how it's being fine-tuned, and the inference engines, and all of the various componentry that goes into the kind of thing that Claude or ChatGPT appears like on the outside world. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of training. It needs to be restricted, and agentic is why, you and I have had this discussion, but for the record, I am a big believer that small language models or specialized language models are going to be the boom, because the large language ones, as much as they're very useful and fantastic technology, you're not going to be able to narrow down the answers the way you need. And so inside the four walls of the enterprise is a very different kettle of fish than what's outside. And we really have to be careful about that.
Agree, Joanne. I want to bring Liz back into the conversation. Liz, let's go down to earth with our teams that are doing problem solving all the time. I can think of one example. I know when I do requirements now with my agile teams, I can get an agent to fill out a story card for me. Right, and start writing out the requirements. I can connect it to a library of standard requirements for security and for operations, and have it insert acceptance criteria that Gen AI recommends appropriate for the requirement that I'm putting out. I'm intrigued about how if you go back to journey mapping. And those sessions we have around understanding process flow. I'm really, those are two areas I haven't seen this done before, but I'm really interested how Gen AI can be applied to that. I don't know if you've done those, but I'm looking for those types of sessions where we're trying to get people to contribute and your ideas of where generative AI can be a good partner.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I'll tell you something. I think that one of the things that Gen AI could do is be the bad guy, right? Like, how often do you have, users who don't give you enough specificity in their requirements to, give you actual success criteria? Or, right, they're just not specific enough. So when you use some kind of a bot to be the bad guy and say, if I here's my requirement, blah, 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 and the bot comes back and says, huh, what would be the success criteria? And it's not the human, they can get mad at the machine. I'm just being facetious. But what's cool about it is that pulling together these requirements, and once you get, like, let's say you let the bot or the AI, I know, sorry, bot's already old school, process an entire user guide and tell it to put together the workflow for you. Let it take the user guide and put together the workflow for you and put that in front of your user group and say, is this how it's supposed to work? Let them say it does or doesn't do what's in front of them.
Really interesting. Taking your user guide, having it create a workflow, and then potentially even design the full experience. I don't think we're there yet with that. But it's certainly intriguing. And I'm
Or
just
your
one.
training manual or whatever documentation you have, right?
It's very interesting, Liz. And that idea of playing bad cop, I'm just thoughts in my mind are around what prompt I'm going to use to do that in a safe way, in a way that doesn't get into something dangerous. But Liz, I do that all the time. If I'm not getting answers, particularly from business stakeholders, and I need to get some concrete opinions around things, I will say things that may not be right. I will give them the answers, hoping that I'm giving the wrong answer. And that
Yes,
they'll correct me.
that's correct. But listen, Isaac, you have how many years of experience and soft skills out the yin yang? Okay. I'm talking about like your average BA can't do that, and they'll get their butt handed to them,
Oh yeah.
right?
They'll be too
Right?
afraid to do it, for
They're
one
either they're
thing.
afraid to do it, so they won't, or they'll ask and they'll get chewed out, chewed up and spit out. This way, it's like, oh geez, you know, the machine is asking for this. I'm wondering if you could.
Yeah. I want to bring Heather back, and then I'm watching the comment stream here. If you have a thought or a comment, a lot of comments here around AI governance. We're going to keep coming back to that conversation in some way or form. So if you have AI governance questions, put them here because we'll craft upcoming sessions just around this. Heather, my question for you is, you work as a work with helping organizations fill talent, talking about taking things that are, problem-solving skills that we have to do differently going into the future. What is your advice for hiring managers, and what is your advice for people who are looking for jobs in terms of their ability to work with Gen AI in problem solving? What are the, how would they answer the question around their abilities around that? Or how would you ask the question to validate whether they've actually used these tools?
I think the key word here is validate, because when you put AI on your resume, it's going to bring it up to the top, and that certainly that's very hot. But if you can validate it, and I think one of the best ways to do that is in storytelling, to describe what the situation was, describe how you addressed it, how what the challenges, what were the issues, and being able to say it in a way that you're not scripted. You're a human, and it's like, well, this is really what happened, but being able to say it in a way that is authentic, and always, always say if there was a problem, there's nothing wrong with that. If you failed, quote unquote, that's okay. The question is how you resolved it, how you recovered, and how you would have done things differently. But telling that story is critical.
Yeah, Heather, I think you're also getting at, there's rarely where you can throw a prompt and get the right answer in one shot. They're designed to do that, but chances are you're going to throw four, five, six different prompts to get something close to your answer. And getting people to tell you that journey, what was wrong with that first answer? How did you adjust it? How did you end up using the results? Going back to Joanne's point, how did you validate the data and the results that it gave you? I think those are all very important questions that you start using. And I'm not sure where I want to.
I
Yeah.
would add one more thing is, and how you're willing to share that, because if you don't want, you want to demonstrate that you're a team player. It's not about what I did, what I did, what I did, is how I gave this to the team, how we changed it, or how did we address it as a result of being in a group.
Yeah. I want to go back to Joe and then end with Joanne. Joe and Joanne, my same question for both of you. Are there things that we should be doing differently when we're using generative AI in a group session? Right. We're not talking just about us, sitting behind the screen and prompting and getting better answers. I think that's part of this process. But now, John brought in the notion of doing live summarization. We've talked about doing research and getting data out of it. We've talked about assuming certain personas and telling it to be empathetic, as Joanne had recommended. And I would want to experiment with Liz's idea of playing bad cop. I think it's very interesting, but I'm a little worried about what that looks like in practice. Joe, are there things that we need to be doing differently? When we're using generative AI in a group session? And then we'll end with Joanne with the same question.
I think Isaac, it was pointed out that trust has to be earned and not be taken for granted. Those of us who have a few years of experience under our belts and are learning the good and the bad and the ugly about this new generative a form of AI, we should be the guardians, if you will. We should be the ones who are questioning everything that comes from it, and educating. I love communicating, right? Let's make sure everybody who's involved is fully and completely aware that this is not a person on the other end of a phone that you can absolutely trust, but it is a machine, as Joanne has pointed out. It is not flawless. Data quality matters very much. It may not be timely data. It may not be complete. We are the guardians, and I think that's probably the thing that I would say is first and foremost to keep in mind.
Thank you, Joe. And Joanne, last thoughts today and what we should be smart and careful of using generative AI in a group problem-solving session.
We need to be extremely careful about the ethics side. We are teaching the machine at the same time as we are learning from the machine. And so we have to be very careful about the ethical aspects of that. And credit where credit is due, in terms of notations, citations. Some brilliant ideas come up in group settings that people then don't let die on the vine, but they can't get farther along with their idea because it's now become someone else's intellectual property, let's say. And that includes the machine. And so we have to be extremely careful about setting good guardrails to Joe's point and being guardians of the technology to say, this is an amazing technological advancement for us, but our behavior is and our sentiment and the way we interact with that piece of equipment is going to dictate the future state. And that I don't think I can emphasize even more strongly than I just did.
You just brought up something that would concern me, and I don't know how to answer this, but what would concern me is, I don't know how well the summarization tools are picking up who said what. And if I'm in that group and I've laid out that good idea and I'm not attributed to it because the Gen AI didn't pick up on that, I'm going to feel pretty hurt by that. I think that's what you're getting at, Joanne.
That's part of it, yes. And part of it also that it can come back and bite you because think about the fact that you're having a discussion, you say something brilliant in an open group, somebody in the room picks that up and starts touting its validity, its veracity, whatever. And the next thing you know, it's at a boardroom level. And, somebody gets blindsided by it. Or it ends up getting published in an annual report because it's what's been fed to the AI. So we have to be careful about privacy, about attribution, about the ethics, and also just general biases we have to be careful of. And by the way, I'm using, and this is not a plug for them, it's just one of the better tools because it does capture who said what when. It's called Fathom. And I've been using it for about a year. Good job, guys, whoever you are, because it does do that kind of recording. Now, what I also do is I take the transcripts and I do put them through an AI engine because it gives me a list of things that I want to follow up on. What do you think of this and how I structure that prompt and whatever? But it becomes a source of information, not just a record, for whatever purpose I would need that record. It's a way of keeping a conversation alive and you can share them with the folks in the room. So I recommend doing two things. If you're going to use a note taker that's not an AI tool, use it and then put it through AI or find one that answers the needs that you have for the group setting, as John suggested.
Thank you, Joanne and Heather, John, Joe, and Liz for joining me on our first episode on LinkedIn Live and our 106th episode of the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. It was we had a couple of hiccups in here, but I think I'm going to call this a success. We made it through our session. We created a very interesting whiteboard. I've only been able to scan through it in a couple areas. I've made notes here. There's at least three ideas on some follow-up sessions. AJ wants to speak about ethics, AI. Humam has brought up small language models, and Joanne, you've brought that up a number of times. I don't know what the topic would be, but it's certainly an area we could be discussing. We talked about earlier around ethics around power and that whether or not or how to keep that in back of our mind. That was Juliet's suggestions. And I want to create a stream of two or three good ideas to cover under AI governance in general. Ashish, if you have a good idea around this, I'm just skimming through this. I'd love to hear about it. So we're going to start planning our sessions next year. Our number one topic that you all asked for was around AI. I don't really like covering AI every single week. It's obviously top of mind for all of us, but we will continue to have sessions that cover it. Our session next week on the 20th will be about shaping tomorrow, moral courage to doing the right thing the right way. David Morgan has suggested that one. On the 27th, we will take a break. We'll be back on the 3rd with culture transformation, establishing a resilient culture. I think that was Derek who recommended that one. On the 10th, we'll be talking about implementing safe Gen AI with guardrails. And then on the 24th, I've locked in a couple of speakers to talk with us around quantum computing. Should be a very interesting one. Just remember the URL starcio.com/coffee/next-event will always redirect to the upcoming event. And for those of you who have not signed up through my community yet, visit drive.starcio.com/community. This is the Star CIO Digital Trailblazer community. I have some new capabilities that I'll be building over the holiday break and announcing those coming into January and February. Folks, we'll see you next week. Thanks again, Heather, Joanne, John, Joe, and Liz for joining me this week. Another thing about this LinkedIn Live, I cannot invite folks who are listening to come up and speak. So if you see an event here that you want to speak at, do message me and I will give you the tools to be able to come up and join us as a speaker for our event. So thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you here next week.